You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right, so here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar, and you said what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we recap SummerSlam and discuss Brock Lesnar, Chris Jericho, Colt Cabana, Bound for Glory, and much, much more. My name is David, and I'm joined today by my good friend Alex. How's everything going?
Everything's going well on my end, man. I've been, for those mixed martial arts fans out there, I've been following the big story about UFC canceling an event today. So my head's been wrapped around that.
Kind of shocking, right?
Absolutely. So if you ask me a question about Triple H and I respond with a question about Dana White or something, just understand it's been a long day.
Yeah, well, the other thing that I just read literally 5 minutes before coming on the air with you tonight, Alex, was that Lance Armstrong is basically going to be given a lifetime ban from cycling and stripped of his 7 Tour de France titles. Did you read that?
I didn't read that, but I heard he had dropped his lawsuit against the U.S. Anti-Doping Agency. So, you know, what's interesting is that if you talk to a lot of international people, they've had a poor opinion of Lance Armstrong for years. And just like everywhere else, I mean, he really won the titles. And under what means, it's debatable, but he really won the titles. So, I mean, you're only stripping them in theory only.
Yeah, I don't even like following sports anymore. It's like one bad story after another, though. You know, yeah. I mean, the thing with him, though, was always kind of shady, Alex. Everyone around him was doping and got caught for it, except the best cycler of his generation. I thought that it was always a little questionable. Gave him the benefit of the doubt, but it appears now that there's mounting evidence.
We have Rocket Clemens pitching on Saturday night, which will be on ESPN Classics. I mean, we love the stars no matter what they do, ultimately, you know?
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of great wrestling to discuss tonight. Let's go ahead and ring the bell. What do you say? But let's try to disagree once or twice tonight.
All right, let's ring the bell.
World Wrestling Entertainment. SummerSlam's main event may have been the last match of Triple H's career. Did his match with Brock Lesnar live up to its billing as the perfect storm? What did you think, Alex?
I actually was wondering what you thought of SummerSlam, because you actually attended it live. So live in the building, what were your thoughts on Brock Lesnar's performance in the match overall?
I thought the match was pretty good. I wrote down here, when I was making notes for the program tonight, you know, what do we expect anymore? I mean, the whole Rock Cena thing for 12 months, and people are like, oh, the match stunk. I mean, what do we think we're going to see in these matches that's literally going to make our jaw drop? Maybe a little like what we saw with Mick Foley and The Undertaker when, you know, Undertaker threw him off the top of Hell in a Cell. But otherwise, you know, matches can only be so good. And I did think that it was intense. I liked a little bit of the mixed martial arts feel. You talk about UFC here at the top. You know, they dimmed the lights before the match started. They were in the corners by themselves with the spotlights on them. I thought there were parts of the match that were really good and very interesting. Certainly, Brock Lesnar had to win, correct?
I would think so, but I mean, I thought he had to win the John Cena match as well. What's interesting is that, David, this was a main event between two performers who aren't active competitors, and I understand that, you know, I'm sure that they're not going to go out there and embarrass themselves, but I mean, David, not enough credit's being given to that. I mean, Triple H is running the, you know, a lot of aspects of the day-to-day business of World Wrestling Entertainment. And Brock Lesnar is living on a ranch somewhere in Minnesota, you know, hunting and fishing. And you have to assume that he's not out doing pro wrestling training on a daily basis. So, I mean, the fact that these guys can go out there and carry a main event match at SummerSlam, which is the number 3 pay-per-view for WWE every year, you have to, you know, say that these guys are real good.
Yeah, I'm okay with that. And I did notice being there that it looked like Brock blew up a little bit. I mean, you know, he certainly more than held his own in this match. And it was intense, and, you know, he doesn't wrestle every day, like you said, but he was breathing pretty heavy at certain parts of this. Well, you know, what I found eye-opening, really, was that it was kind of confusing for the crowd at the end. That's the word I would use, because when Triple H tapped out, I remember looking at my watch and there was still like 20 minutes to go, I thought, in the show. And, you know, I thought they were going to go right up to 11 Eastern. And I don't think people really knew it was over. And then he was just kind of walking around the ring. And it didn't have that big punch, you know, that big ending emotional feel, maybe like they thought they wanted it to have.
The Kimura lock as a whole, I don't really think the move is very over. I mean,
yeah.
He first applied it onto Triple H, I believe. And he may have applied it to Cena, but I don't remember. But the first big angle with it, of course, is when he broke Triple H's arm last time, which was broken for a couple of days, and then he was able to hold up one of Manny Pacquiao's many titles. And I mean, I just don't think the move is over. And for those who watched UFC, it wasn't a move that Brock employed. So, you know, I have a lot of problems with the Kimura as a finish overall.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you here. We shouldn't agree tonight, but I'm going to agree with you because I kind of feel like these big, strong guys like The Undertaker when they do Hell's Gate, I'm not a big fan of these monster wrestlers using kind of submission holds like that really, if you're in the 400 level at the Staples Center, you can't really see very well, you know? I used to like Hogan's leg drop or Savage's elbow because, damn, the move looked good.
Yes and no. I mean, something about the 400 level is something that a lot of old wrestlers would preach. Is, you know, when you punch someone, you're not doing it for the guys in the front row. You're doing it for the guys in the upper deck. But it is nice to have a couple of submissions in your arsenal as well.
Both CM Punk and Sheamus retained their championships because of shaky refereeing. Did the WWE make both their champions look weak? I kind of think they did, Alex. I thought both matches were acceptable. They were fine. I know there's been a lot of criticism over the triple threat match, and as much as I respect Big Show, God, he's been around forever, and he's been a very good character. I just don't need him in the world title picture anymore. I don't like triple threat matches, but I didn't think the match was a total mess. I thought the ending was a little strange, where they both put the submission hold on him. Didn't look very clean from where I was sitting. But I just felt like one of those matches, the champion should have gone over or lost the title either way, but I didn't like shaky refereeing in both. What did you think?
I'm a big proponent of clean finishes when you can do them. And unfortunately, World Wrestling Entertainment has kind of put themselves in a position where more often than not, they don't want to do a clean finish. But what they've undergone this education process to the fans to where now a lot of fans accept these finishes. So, I mean, your question was, do these finishes make the champions look too weak? And honestly, my answer is no, it doesn't in this current format, because this is what the fans are used to and they expect. I mean, for someone who's watched professional wrestling for a while and knows you can do it another way, yeah. I mean, I'm not a fan of it. I think there should be more clean finishes up and down the board. And if a guy is going for a title shot, he should win all of his matches going into the title shot. I mean, there's simple things like that that you can do to make these matches a little bit more important. But if the fans are used to it, then, I mean, it's not wrong in the current climate, I guess, even though it does nothing for the interest of these matches.
Well, there was a great article on Grantland.com. Did you read that about how even the baby faces of today kind of use heel tactics? Did you read that article on Grantland recently?
Actually, no. I didn't read that article.
Yeah, and it was talking about Sheamus, interestingly enough. It was kind of this guy's preview to SummerSlam. And, you know, and again, Sheamus won and retained his championship in a way that a heel would have done it, in a way that the honky-tonk man in the old days would have done it. You know, foot on the ropes, but the ref doesn't see it. He kind of skated by, almost how I would have expected Alberto Del Rio to win the title. So I thought that was, you know, at least interesting, and kind of went along with what that guy wrote on Grantland.com. No, and really, this is a different time period, because SummerSlam used to finish feuds, and now SummerSlam has lost to me a little bit of its luster, a little bit of its special feeling, because now, you know, the next night Jericho and Ziggler wrestle again, and then Alberto Del Rio is going to get another title shot and build off this storyline. It didn't have that feel of finality that we used to get from a show this big.
Sure. I mean, even as of a couple of years ago, I mean, we would see a big debut the week after WrestleMania, and then, you know, you'd prepare the guy to main event SummerSlam, or at least be in a featured role at SummerSlam. And, you know, we don't really get that kind of build anymore. It's like they kind of drudge through the summer until they can get back to the January until they start building for WrestleMania again. You know, it's just, I really think it's unfortunate overall, though, that a lot of fans are accustomed to these finishes now, especially if you're a fan in the post-Monday Night War era. And this is all you know professional wrestling to be, is like, hey, you know, they don't have to win every week, and baby faces can cheat if they want to, and, mm-hmm. you know, and then what we're seeing overall is a dramatic decline in popularity and overall interest in professional wrestling, and it doesn't have to be that way.
Chris Jericho defeated Dolph Ziggler in a very good opening match at SummerSlam. Then he lost to him the following night on Raw, essentially costing him his WWE career. But we knew this was coming because Jericho was touring with Fozzy this fall. Did that ruin the enjoyment of these two very good matches? Kind of did for me a little bit, Alex, because I knew that Jericho wasn't going to be here in the fall. He may come back, of course, for WrestleMania, but... You know, otherwise, it was two solid workers that I thought put on two very, very good matches, not amazing matches. What did you think of the two that we saw from Jericho and Dolph Ziggler recently?
When Chris Jericho returned, I do a Raw reaction show on angrymarks.com where every week after Raw, mm-hmm. we discuss Raw live. And when Chris Jericho came back, I said, this is awesome. He can be used to put over the new talent because that's what he talks about in his book and that's what he talks about in every interview. And who better to put over than Dolph Ziggler? Mm-hmm. Now, at the show, SummerSlam, he beats Dolph Ziggler. And then the next night on Raw, Dolph Ziggler gets a win, but then what happens? Chris Jericho lays him out. I mean, what did that do for anyone? And now Jericho's gone, and Dolph Ziggler's going to come back next week, having beat Chris Jericho in a match, but then Chris Jericho made him look stupid after the match. And Jericho in his very own book said that the perfect way for him to go out was the way he went out in 2005 when John Cena beat him, and he got dragged out kicking and screaming. Well, he went out as the triumphant babyface, I guess, having beat Dolph Ziggler, who's now going to challenge for the world title. It's just stupid booking, David, and it's just stupid.
I forgot about that. You're right, that on the match on Monday night, Jericho dropped him before he left. I didn't like that. That's a good point you make there. And I guess I was okay with Jericho winning at SummerSlam and then having the rematch Monday. I will tell you, I am getting to be a much bigger Dolph Ziggler fan. A year ago, I didn't care much for him, but he's grown on me, and I do like his ring work. I didn't think he and Jericho had amazing chemistry. I think they could get there if with a little more practice in the ring together. But I do think that he can be a good player going forward. You know, so he's going to cash in this Money in the Bank. You think he can have a good run with the world title, right?
Sure, but I mean, it's like the steps to get there. I mean, he's lost a considerable amount of matches. You know, I just hate it when world champions are done like this. I mean, I remember Sheamus' first world title reign, where when he was champion, he never beat anyone clean. And I assume we'll see much of the same from Dolph Ziggler. It's interesting that this is the guy they're pushing. A lot of people will probably tell you this is a push, David. Oh, he's getting pushed. He's got the Money in the Bank. But more often than not, Dolph Ziggler loses. It's just unfortunate that, you know, this is a guy with a lot of talent who's going to be expected to carry the company into the future in some form or fashion. And this is how he's booked every week. You know, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, give me real quick before we move on, your last impression of SummerSlam 2012.
I think a lot of people walked away shocked that Triple H actually lost to Brock Lesnar. And unfortunately, I don't think that's the reaction you should have to wrestling pay-per-view, is that you're shocked that they did the right thing.
Yeah. I thought in general it was an enjoyable show. That is probably, though, a colored opinion because I was there and I'd had a few beers. So, I thought the Kevin Rudolph's section where the Divas were dancing was great. I was just having a great time. So we'll move on.
TNA Wrestling. This week on Impact, we saw the debut of former ECW General Manager Tiffany to the company. We are seeing Impact stars cut. Is this the kind of talent that should be brought in? David, were you familiar with Tiffany's work on ECW and then later SmackDown?
Yeah, sure. And at the time, I was, you know, covering women's wrestling exclusively, and so I paid attention to Tiffany when she was there. I actually thought that she was decent in the ring, although I didn't love always the cheerleader kind of gimmick she had. But I was kind of surprised she showed up on TNA, to be honest.
I can't remember her in-ring, so I don't want to speak there. But I know her backstage interviews were always terrible, and She was just generally, anytime she touched the microphone, she was terrible. That's my lasting impression of Tiffany. And it's just a surprising signing. I mean, a couple weeks ago we talked about how, you know, UFC. There, I told you I was going to do it tonight, David. I told you that TNA was, you know, they may be losing money, but you know what? It's probably not a bad idea that they let go of some of this talent that they may not be using anymore. But then you bring in Tiffany, and what purpose does she serve you that Velvet Sky couldn't have? I'm not a fan of this signing at all, in particular.
Well, we don't know all the behind-the-scenes stuff, obviously. Maybe Tiffany, you know, came in with her hat in her hand and said, hey, look, I'll do whatever you want me to do, because I kind of like the special referee character. If they keep that going, maybe Velvet Sky, you know, said, no, I want to wrestle. I want the title. You never know. Maybe she was difficult to work with, just speculating. Certainly, Tiffany comes with some baggage, as you mentioned. You know, there were some issues with WWE. What I don't like about it, though, is this reliance on other promotions' talent. I'm just a real believer with TNA that they've got to build their own and use people that people associate only with TNA. The people are always going to think of Taryn Terrell as, you know, she was Tiffany in WWE, and then she was crazy and married Drew McIntyre and had some issues there. I don't know. I don't know if she's knockout material. She's a knockout to look at. I did have the privilege of meeting her, and she's absolutely stunning. But her wrestling is mediocre, and she's probably not going to move the needle for that company.
Absolutely. I mean, does she have some transcendent talent that we're going to be amazed with in the ring or on the microphone? And is she someone that, like you said, is going to turn the dial? Oh, that's ECW or SmackDown's Tiffany. I cannot miss this week's edition of Impact. I mean, there's a lot of women in Shimmer who, I mean, I hate to sound frank, but they're a lot cheaper than what Tiffany's going to bring you, that would be more than fine in this role. And then, by the way, you'd be exposing new talent to the national scene, which if you're TNA Impact, that should be a priority of yours, is establishing new talent and mixing them in with the old established talent that you have to present a product that World Wrestling Entertainment isn't providing you. So the signing of Tiffany, I was not a fan of at all. That's all I have to say about that. We are entering the end of the Bound for Glory series. I enjoy this year much more than I did last year's. What I didn't like, though, is the gimmick matches for extra points. Tonight on Impact, for example, they had a three-way dance for the winner got 20 points for the Bound for Glory series. What's interesting is that, for example, New Japan Pro Wrestling every year does a round-robin tournament where all the competitors wrestle each other one time, and they're all one-on-one matches. And there's a point system, and I don't understand why TNA has to incorporate things like ladder matches and this and that. I mean, I think it kind of takes away from the prestigious nature of this tournament, because the winner is going to get a title shot at their quote-unquote WrestleMania.
Well, is this their attempt to make the competition for that number one contender spot more legitimate? You know, like that there's a build to it. Hey, this person got the most points over the course of the past couple months. I mean, there's some part of that I kind of like. In theory, is the problem, Alex, that you don't like that it's building towards kind of like their WrestleMania title shot?
Well, no. I mean, actually, I do enjoy the aspects that you just brought up. I think that I like the fact that the winner of this tournament gets to go to Bound for Glory and wrestle for the title, and I like the point concept. It's something very interesting.
Okay.
And I like the graphics they show. I don't like the fact that they engage in gimmick matches. And like a ladder match is worth, you know, this many points. Let's just do straight single matches. And I actually really like the fact that they do some of these matches at the house shows too, which add importance to the house shows. I'm not a fan of mixing in the gimmick matches. Let's leave the ladder matches out of this. Let's leave the three-way matches out of this. Let's just have straight single matches, and the winner gets the points. And let's settle it that way. Because, I mean, I'm just not a fan of incorporating the gimmicks.
You ready for this?
Yes.
I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah. Get a little spicy here. You know, I think it's okay. I really do. I think the wrestling audience has a short attention span, and, you know, throwing some variety in there is a good thing. I absolutely love the fact that they do that at house shows and include those points. Excellent, excellent. And that would really make me want to go if TNA came around here. Like you said, add importance. I don't mind the gimmick matches as long as it's not all they do. I think if they did just straight singles matches, you know, 2-3 weeks down the road, we'd get a little bored with that. So I think that it can work. Let's kind of reserve judgment and see where this goes. And that pay-per-view is in, what, October?
Yes, correct. It's actually around the time of my birthday every year, and actually going has been two of my birthday presents, believe it or not.
Very good, very good. Where is it this year? Are you going to be able to go this year?
No, it's actually in Phoenix, Arizona, which is a little bit too far for me to drive, but I actually went to the one in Brea, California, and I went to the one in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We have yet to see the return of a Gut Check Challenge winner. Is it time to drop this concept? This is actually fitting because tonight's Impact had the newest edition of the Gut Check Challenge. A competitor who claimed to be from Jackson, Mississippi, which is actually right next to my hometown, and then he was introduced as being from Memphis, Tennessee, and that's okay, because he actually had a terrible performance. We've not seen any of these Gut Check guys return. We saw a video on the first one, Alex Silva, but we've not seen any of these guys return to the show. We've had, I believe, three or four winners. It's kind of a silly concept at this point. You win, and you get to do what? Go... where? Because there's no follow-ups. This whole concept, I'm sick of it.
Well, this is an example of professional wrestling kind of at its worst. Because it should work, right? This could be cool.
Absolutely. I mean, it'd be like, this year in the NFL draft when the Indianapolis Colts drafted number one Andrew Luck, and there was all this speculation by analysts of what are they going to do with Andrew Luck? How's he going to fit into the offense? Oh, and we send them to NFL Europe for 3 years, and you never see the guy. So what was the point of all that build-up and all that? It's just, we need to see a debut. And if you're not selecting guys for these gut checks that are ready to go into television, then you need a better scouting department. There's plenty of guys on the independent scene without contracts who are able to go right in from the Gut Check Challenge and become a regular wrestler on TNA.
That's the key, is if you're going to have someone compete and win this thing, they have to then follow through and be on the main show or on the main roster. I remember when NXT, I felt, dropped the ball for WWE because they would have NXT winners that would then not necessarily go and do anything on the main roster. The purpose of that show is to find someone that they're going to put into their programming, right?
Absolutely, and I mean, we saw it last year with WWE's program Tough Enough, this reality show that built up over weeks. The one well-known independent talent, M-Dog 20, or Matt Cross, was on there. He got eliminated in short order, and we got Andy Levine, and Andy Levine never made his WWE debut and recently got cut. I mean, you invest all this time, and the Gut Check isn't over 6 or 8 weeks. It's over 2 weeks of television.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, you invest time in this talent, and then they never come back. So it's like, why do I watch that segment?
But I don't think they should drop it yet. I think they need to revamp it and make it more important, because I do like that these TNA unique type of events or unique type of programming, but there's definitely some flaws in the execution here. And as I said, that's why it's wrestling at its worst, because – you know, if I watch the Dallas Cowboys and they lose by 40 points, that's a professional football game. You know, well, that is what it is. You take that risk. Professional football is unlike wrestling. Wrestling should always be entertaining. And when it's frustrating, you just scratch your head and say, this is not well done.
You're absolutely correct. And we saw a bunch of ready talent for TNA debut just a few months ago for their X Division tournament. So it's not that the talent isn't out there. It's just they're being obstinate or something and bringing in these guys.
A big word to use tonight.
Hopefully I used it right.
Wild card topic number one. NWA World Heavyweight Champion Colt Cabana is battling Adam Pearce in a 7 Levels of Hate series of matches. Each match is a different stipulation, Alex, which I know you may not be crazy about. I like the idea. How do you feel about the 7 levels of hate between Colt Cabana and Adam Pearce?
I was actually talking to someone about this weekend, and I like the idea as far as I'm aware it's happening, but I don't know where and when and where they're at. I know during this thing Adam Pearce defeated Colt Cabana for the title. He's now the champion. And I think if Pearce loses again, he's going to retire. It's like I see coverage of it, but it's not getting a ton of coverage because, quite frankly, David, there's no way for you and I to really see these shows unless we happen to be in the area. So it's good, I guess, to get a good national following, but if I were an independent company, I would try to figure out how to get more of a regional following, if I say national following, because if I can't purchase these shows, then what's really the point of me knowing? You know what I mean, David?
Yeah, I do, although, again, I'm going to disagree with you. This is just a train wreck of a show. you can go to onlinewarofwrestling.com, and we do put the NWA news and notes on there, covering the seven levels of hate and having links, I believe, to the actual YouTube videos of the matches. Now, there's not the immediacy of watching it on a Monday night program or something like that, but, you know, the NWA is trying to publicize this. I think you got two very capable stars. I think Adam Pearce and Colt Cabana are interesting and can you know, have a good chemistry in the ring. So I like that. It also reminds me, Alex, remember when they did the Chris Benoit Booker T thing in WCW with their series of matches?
Yes.
I like the concept, and I do like the variety of matches from one to the next. The thing when you have a series like this is you know it's going seven. You know, this isn't the World Series where it's going to be over in four or five, perhaps. You know, it's going to, one guy jumped out to a 3-0 lead, and, you know, that guy's going to come back, and it's going to go seven matches, wouldn't you say?
Speaking of the National Wrestling Alliance, it harkens back to the Magnum TA Nikita Koloff Best of Seven series for those National Wrestling Alliance fans. But, yes, absolutely.
Wow, old school.
Yes. It's like you said in the last segment, though, is that professional wrestling should never not be entertaining because you can always make it entertaining. And Game 7s are always fun, and it seems like they're going to make this thing a Game 7. But never put it past Adam Pearce to do something a little different. Colt Cabana, when he left Ring of Honor, it's tradition that the guy leaving the territory, leaving the company, loses his last match. But actually, Adam Pearce actually put over Colt Cabana, and Colt Cabana won his last match in Ring of Honor. In an interview I had with Adam Pearce, I actually asked him why they had done that. And Adam said, sometimes in pro wrestling, you just have to switch it up because the fans have certain expectations. So you just do something a little different. It keeps them on their toes. So while we believe it's going to go seven, that's not a guaranteed thing. Adam Pearce is a brilliant mind, and Colt Cabana has definitely made a name for himself since getting released from World Wrestling Entertainment. Not that he didn't have a name before, but definitely he's using a lot of social media, has his own podcast. I mean, the guy is getting his name out there, I think, to a bigger extent than what he has before. But I like the fact that, you know what, people are thinking outside the box and doing something creative. So overall, I'm a fan of this concept. Wild card topic number two. There is a new ECW documentary that is in the works. The funds are currently being collected on Kickstarter.com. Do we need another ECW documentary? And also, I'm about to drop a little reality in this radio show. I actually screw that up every week, and I never say wild card topic number two, and I did it this week.
Yeah.
I actually read a little bit about this documentary. And apparently they've compiled over 2,000 hours of interviews dating back from the year 2000, I believe, with Paul Heyman and a lot of the major players in the company. I was actually negative on this when I thought of it, but then after reading that, I'm somewhat interested. But I'm kind of an overkill with ECW merchandise. I mean, unless this documentary is going to break something new or something groundbreaking, I'm not really going to be interested in it if it wants to tell the same story of ECW was a popular company because it was hardcore.
Right. And, you know, now that the company's no longer in existence, there's a bit of romance in looking back on it. Right. Anytime something's not around anymore, we kind of remember it fondly. And we've certainly heard a lot of the stories. Do you feel like you're going to learn anything new from this documentary?
If they have as much footage and interviews as they say they have, I'm sure I will. For those that don't know, my favorite year of any wrestling company is ECW 1996. Mm-hmm. I just feel like Paul Heyman really created a masterpiece that year. And I get tired of watching all these documentaries and being told, oh, it was because of the rock music and it was because of the violence in the wrestling. Paul Heyman was an excellent storyteller. Paul Heyman was excellent at developing a television show, making it look different. All the concepts that I preach every week, Paul Heyman is very excellent at all that. I just get tired of these documentaries trying to explain to me what ECW was when I went through it. And if this documentary sheds light on events and stories that I may not know that much about, then yes, I'm very excited. But if it's going to tell me the same old garbage I've heard for years about ECW, then quite frankly, I'm not interested in it.
Yeah, I hear you. Do you think that the WWE years where they kind of rebranded ECW has hurt its legacy?
Not with the fans who were familiar with the product, I don't think so. You know, I was actually at an Extreme Rules pay-per-view June 1st, 2008, because I actually have the chair sitting here in my room, San Diego Sports Arena, and there was an 8-year-old kid behind me chanting ECW at the show, and I'll never forget that. That kid wasn't even alive when ECW was at its heyday.
Right.
And for those, I think what the documentaries and what WWE's version of ECW has done has given a new life and a new legacy for those who may not have been around to follow the company. I mean, David, I'm not sure of your awareness of ECW, but that may be all you're familiar with, is that company and those documentaries. But for those who went through the company and watched it on television, it holds, you know, it's that's what it's going to be to us.
Mm-hmm. Real quick before we move on, you mentioned Paul Heyman a few times. How do you like him in WWE now as Brock Lesnar's mouthpiece, essentially?
I believe that he's come in and been one of the best performers they have. I mean, on the mic, he's excellent. I mean, he's very articulate. He's very good at expressing his points. And then he does little things that kind of make you dislike him and Brock Lesnar. The way I like how he always repeats Brock Lesnar. Heyman is excellent.
My client, Brock Lesnar.
Absolutely. I love it.
That was a real bad impression.
Blast from the past. Today is Funaki's birthday. He had a long career in the WWE as Funaki. He was also well known for his comedic segments and being used as a jobber. What you may not know is that his brother is a legend in fighting and professional wrestling in Japan, and his own career in Japan is very storied as he influenced a lot of modern wrestlers by being involved in the revolutionary matches in Michinoku Pro Wrestling. Before I read that, were you familiar with any of that?
No, I really wasn't. I mean, obviously, I understand how big wrestling is in Japan and in Mexico and other countries around the world, but my experience with him was just during his time in WWE.
You brought up a few weeks ago about Harley Race and what was done to him when he came into World Wrestling Federation. And for all intents and purposes, the same thing was kind of done to Funaki. Huh. And not that it was necessarily a bad thing, because let's face it, Funaki had a job for a long, long time and made a lot of money with the biggest wrestling promotion in the world. But I think it's very, very interesting that American fans, for the most part, have this one image of Funaki. But then, like I said, his brother recently made a return to pro wrestling, for All Japan Pro Wrestling, after having a very storied fighting slash MMA slash kind of professional. Mixed martial arts in Japan is very different than what it is in America.
Mm-hmm.
And but his brother was a big figure. He headlined one of the biggest shows, New Year's Eve, against Kazushi Sakuraba in a dream fight. And then Funaki was a part of Michinoku Pro Wrestling, which influenced a lot of the high flyers that we see today. Those Michinoku Pro tapes are still being watched by a lot of young wrestlers today and are still being influenced by him. It's interesting how the guy had two varying careers.
Yeah, and that's one thing I like about doing this radio show with you, because you really do have a great understanding of kind of the worldwide context of professional wrestling, not just WWE and what we see here, of course, on USA, you know, TV Monday nights. I learn a lot from you, you know, whether it be, you know, with promotions around the world or even in the indie scene, which you're much more read up on than I am. So I thought this was an interesting blast from the past. And, you know, I did meet Funaki at one of the WWE Access sessions, and you know, now I feel a little disappointed that I didn't understand more about his career at the time.
There's nothing wrong with, you know, not being, I guess, aware of, you know, like independent professional wrestling and Japanese professional wrestling. I mean, if you're able to, I guess, you know, be entertained by World Wrestling Entertainment, then that's fine. I mean, it's just like music. I mean, you can be a fan of whatever rock band you are. You don't have to listen to Dream Theater, for example, or some of the more underground and obscure musical artists, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But for some fans, they want to be more into that, and that's fine too, you know. There's a lot of room in the WWE universe or in the wrestling universe for all different types of fans.
Well, okay, so before we wrap the show, we usually go on some rants here. Just a real quick aside, that's why I don't understand why the internet wrestling community is so negative with each other, why everyone's so angry all the time. Why do you mean you like the Divas? What do you mean you like John Cena? What do you care? Like you just said, there's so many other styles, companies, characters. Why do people get so wrapped up in telling you what you should like?
You know what's interesting, Dave, is I discovered independent professional wrestling when I was about 12 or 13 years old. I mean, I've been following indies for a long, long time. And recently I made an opinion about a wrestler named El Generico. El Generico is the indie darling, for example. He has a lot of great matches. He's an incredible talent, David. Mm-hmm. If you ever get the opportunity to watch an El Generico match, I would highly suggest it.
Okay.
But the guy, his gimmick is that of a generic luchador from Tijuana, Mexico. The guy is Canadian, very pale, and he would never be accused of being a bodybuilder. But there's a lot of fans on message boards who would love to see this guy in World Wrestling Entertainment. And I made an opinion one day on a message board saying, you know what, El Generico, because of his gimmick, because of his body, he isn't exactly waving the flag saying, hey, World Wrestling Entertainment, you should really sign me because of his gimmick, because of his approach to professional wrestling. And I'm not demeaning him as a wrestler. He's an awesome wrestler. Check out his matches. But he's not, you know, what they would typically employ. And I feel like if you want to be employed by World Wrestling Entertainment, then you present them a product that they'd be interested in. And it's funny because I got all negative feedback to that. Oh, you don't know anything about independent wrestling. You're unaware of El Generico. And mind you, I saw El Generico's first few matches when he arrived in America. You know, people always try to know more than you and this and that. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, because, I mean, I've seen a lot of stuff, you've seen a lot of stuff, but we all have one passion, that's professional wrestling, so we should be able to communicate on a better basis, I guess.
Yeah. That's good. I think, you know, I think that was a good rant to close the show on. What do you think?
Sure, Dave, if you're, you know, because I got a lot of them telling me that UFC news today made me very angry, but yes, that seems like a good spot we could end the show on.
Don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. You can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com. You can submit topics or questions you'd like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. You can also suggest that we just stick to wrestling and don't go off on tangents about the Tour de France and baseball and all kinds of stuff. Anyway, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM. And we will also post directly to the OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, I am David.
And I'm Alex.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio. All right, well that's